We will begin reading in verse number 19. We'll read down to the end of the chapter, and we'll see just how much we can get done this evening. Worst comes to worst, we'll just finish it off next week. All right, so Bible says, "Then came up the Ziphites to Saul, to Gibeah, saying, Doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood, in the hill of Hakalah, which is on the south of Jeshimon? Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand." And Saul said, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me. Go, I pray you, prepare yet, and know and see his place, where his haunt is, and who has seen him there, for it is told me that he dealeth very subtly. See therefore, and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself, and come ye again to me with the certainty, and I will go with you, and it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah." And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul, but David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon, in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. Saul also and his men went to seek him, and they told David wherefore he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. And Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David on and his men on that side of the mountain. And David made haste to get away for fear of Saul, for Saul and his men compassed David and his men round about to take him. But there came a messenger unto Saul, saying, "Haste thee and come, for the Philistines have invaded the land." Wherefore Saul returned from pursuing after David, and went against the Philistines. Therefore they call that place. Let me pause real quick, because I got this broke down. Where is it at? Wrong page. Selahemalakaav. I broke that puppy down. And David went up from thence and dwelt in strongholds at En-Gedi. All right, so the title of the lesson was officially "A Messenger Comes." As I got to looking at it here, man, I just kept seeing enemies everywhere that David turns. The Ziphites, they are from his tribe of Judah, and yet they have decided to go and rat him out. King Saul is, of course, looking after David. David's, further on the run, and all of a sudden, here pops up yet another enemy, the Philistines. Only God's going to use the Philistines to help David. So, just enemies everywhere, and messengers galore, and oh wow, what an event taking place here. But isn't it just like God to, circle everybody, and in the confusion, just move everybody on out? Alright, let's back up there to verse number 19. Then came up the Ziphites to Saul to Gibeah, saying, "Doth not David hide himself with us in strongholds in the wood, in the hill of Hakalah, which is on the south of Jeshimon?" So Saul had, of course, returned to his capital until new information on David's whereabouts could come in to him. There's no point in keep running around in circles as you don't know where David went. You're just going to waste time. You're going to waste resources. And David's just getting further and further away. So he went ahead and went back home. Now these guys here, they are not concerned with David being one of them. Always a bad proposition when we start looking at someone who we're related to. We've gone to church with them for decades. They've been a co-worker of ours for I don't know how long. And yeah, you're not one of mine anymore. We just dismiss them like that. Always trouble. And here they are, they're treating David that way. And their only concern is to keep King Saul happy. Perhaps it's a matter of that word about what had happened to all the priests by the hand of Saul had gotten down to them, and they're like, yeah, you know what, let's keep Saul happy so he don't do that to us. But at the same time, it's not like that's an excuse to betray David like that. You just simply say, Saul, we ain't got a clue. We're not hiding him. We ain't got a clue. We're staying out of your way. You want to go search for him, no problem. We will back off and let you search. But no, they go and rat David out. The bad thing about having so many people with David, of course, remember he's got 600 soldiers plus their families. That's a lot of people to try to hide. Even in the wilderness, you got all the forests and all this stuff there. You're still going to be making a lot of noise marching along. Anything that's reflective is going to be, you know, like strobe lights going off as the sun hits it, drawing more attention. And let's face facts. They're people. They're going to be talking. And when this group of people is talking, and this group of people is talking, and this group can't quite hear themselves because this group got too close and they're talking too loud, they're going to start talking louder. And this group don't like that they're talking louder, so they start talking louder. And next thing you know, everybody's shouting across the lines to get their points across. You ain't got no stealth whatsoever. Everybody can see you, and everybody knows your conversation too. So it's hard to hide such a large group. Hard to keep them going quietly and all this. Even though this is what's necessary, human nature is going to kick in. So even though they didn't know which specific cave David was hidden in up here in the hill, they do have the general area narrowed down. The hill that David had set up his camp would one day also be the same one where the high priest Jonathan. And this is going to the time of the Maccabees, this Jonathan here. So it's not Saul's son Jonathan, but a different Jonathan. He's going to build the castle called Masada and use that castle to defend the Jews during the time of the Maccabees. And then, of course, when Titus comes in and destroys Jerusalem and all that, Masada is going to be one of the last places to fall, where they slaughter a lot of people there, throwing them off the hill. But that's not going to be for a few hundred years from where David's at right now. Verse number 20. Now therefore, O king, come down according to all the desire of thy soul to come down, and our part shall be to deliver him into the king's hand. Now, geographically, Ziph is south of Gibeah. So the comment about telling Saul to come on down, you're the next contestant on the Price is Wrong. It's a geographical statement. It's literally, hey, you're north of us, so come on down south to where we are at. It's also doubles as a figure of speech, as that he was going to have to descend from his throne there in the palace to come down to where the common man is down here hanging out in the woods. And it's also an indictment about his descent into further madness. He's on the lookout for David. He's wanting information. Where's David? They are now facilitating him going deeper into his madness because they're whetting his appetite. Oh, there's David. I can get closer to him. I can catch the little runt this time and wring his neck with my own hands. Oh, yeah, I'm all in. And any sort of an addiction, booze, drugs, whatever, all you need is a little taste, and you're willing to go all in on it. You've had it before, you like it, you want more of it, let me have some. Well, the same thing right here is a descent into madness with him as he gets closer to David. So now he's just got to go, he's taking the bait. Now, they knew that all Saul could think about was killing David. And you think about over there in James chapter 4 where he talks about you have not because you ask not. You have not because you ask amiss. You asking, but all you're wanting to do is consume it for your own lusting. Your motives are wrong. Saul's motives here are wrong. He doesn't want to be best buds with David. He doesn't want to teach David anymore how to be a king. He doesn't want to do anything that would be beneficial to David. He just wants to kill David because he wants his own line to be the ones who are going to be in charge of Israel. When it came down to it, they were willing to do whatever it took to make Saul happy. If he wanted to come after David himself, fine. If he didn't want to personally come down, no problem. They could capture David themselves and then drag him back to the king. So they are more than willing to do whatever it takes to make Saul happy. And wouldn't it be wonderful if Christians nowadays would do whatever it takes, be more than willing to do whatever it takes to make our King of Kings and Lord of Lords happy. But unfortunately, not too many Christians are into doing that anymore. Verse number 21. And Saul said, "Blessed be ye of the Lord, for ye have compassion on me." Just reading that verse there, I can't help but wonder if some of the people around Saul kind of stepped back and looked up to make sure they weren't going to get struck by lightning for him saying that. It is wrong for anyone to try to justify or cover up their actions by bringing religion into it, by dragging God into something that is not godly. This very pious statement of Saul's meant literally nothing to him because he's living by force. He's not living by faith. The Lord bless you. Come off of it. You just slaughtered his priest. And you think God's going to honor anything that you say? My soul, no. All they wanted was for him to not come after them. That was enough blessing for them. And he's just sitting here doing his best to, I'm just so holy. I'm so holy. I should get me a white collar and put it right here in front underneath my crown. Yes, I'm so holy. Get out of here with that nonsense. Let's see. Oh yeah, verse 21. He had previously complained back in chapter 22, verse 8, that no one was willing to help him in his struggle against David. Now this group of men from David's own tribe have stepped up to the plate, which proved to be a huge morale boost for Saul. And sin definitely can be a huge morale boost for people. And very detrimental to those trying to follow God. So we definitely need to mind our P's and Q's. Just because we say something that sounds good does not mean it is wholesome. And it certainly was not here. Everything about this little speech of his is just wrong. Verse 22. "Go, I pray you, prepare yet, and know and see his place where his haunt is, and who has seen him there. For it is told me that he dealeth very subtly." So Saul wanted as precise information as he could possibly get about David. Now he wants to know exactly right down to the square foot where David is going to be. He needed to know everywhere that David liked to make a habit of going to. He was looking for any discernible pattern. Okay, David would go here. He'll skip the next couple miles and then make camp. He'll skip a couple more miles, make camp. He'll skip more miles, make camp. He'll come over here and the next thing you know, he's back over here where he first was. He wants to know that full pattern and not just where he would go to make camp, but how often he moves from one place to the other. Is there a particular time of day when he starts on the march? Particular time of day when they decide to settle for the day. He wants every detail. He's planning like it's our military, trying to get as much detail as he can here because he doesn't want to mess around. He wants to kill David. If he doesn't catch him here and he knows David's going to be here, he's going to go and march over to here. That way David just walks right into him. Okay? It would take time for his army to march, and they would be easily seen coming. Remember, he's traveling with about 3,000 men, the 3,000 chosen men that he would have here, whereas David has got his 600 plus families. But if Saul knew where to look, like I said, he could avoid all the handicaps that he's dealing with and get ahead of David, set up an ambush, maybe have some men come in from behind, just catch him right in the middle in a pincer move, and finish David off if at all possible. He would love to do that. Saul wanted names of the individuals who made these reports. You know, he wants to know exactly who's on his side, who's not, and if the report doesn't pan out, oh, now I know who's been lying to me. I can get rid of you. Now, there's also the side that if the report works out, he can reward their faithfulness. Because, you know, he's a guy who likes to reward faithfulness. He did it with David originally, and then, like I said, chapter 22, he talked about how he was going to reward those who would be on his side. So, you know, he's trying to keep everything going on the up and up, because you catch more flies with honey than you do vinegar. You're going to see better results if you treat your people better. So, yeah, he can, you know, spare a couple of dollars to make someone happy so that they give him the right information. But what this does sound, though, since this is the Ziphites that are doing this, Saul needs to go out and get himself some new spies, because they are falling down on the job. They can't get things done. Complete strangers off the street are doing a better job. Well, that says a lot. I think it says a lot today, too, about some of the issues we're going through. Anyways, Saul knew David was a very crafty man just from how he had gone about getting the 200 foreskins of the Philistines. His spies undoubtedly had reported back the same measures being taken by David now as well. The same thing that he would do when he'd go out to fight any of the Philistines. David's still doing them. So he knew a little bit from back then. He's gotten some word now about how things are working out. Saul's trying to put all the information together. And that part is good. Let's make sure we've got all of our facts together. That we've got everything lined up correctly. The problem is Saul's just got it all backward. It's like he's putting it together in a mirror. Because if he was doing this all the correct way, it would be leading him to, hey, David, let's be buddies again, and I know you're going to be the king. And I'm going to take and make sure I've done everything I can to lift you up so as you can be the best king possible for God's people. That should have been the goal. That should be our goal, even with these Bible studies, that we are lifting one another up so as that we can become the best people for God here at Faith Baptist. Sunday mornings, Tuesday nights, anything else that we get going on here. We're lifting each other up, not for the sake of ourselves, not for the sake of the name of the church, but for God Almighty. Verse number 23. See therefore, and take knowledge of all the lurking places where he hideth himself. And come ye again to me with the certainty, and I will go with you, and it shall come to pass, if he be in the land, that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah. Again, he's trying to discern any patterns for David's movements. And it got me to think about there in Jesus' day, when the chief priests decided that they had had enough, they needed to catch him. They wanted whatever method it would take in order to be able to catch him so they can crucify him. And along comes Judas. All right, this is great. We'll give you 30 pieces of silver. You go and you set this up. You make sure you've got everything planned in detail. And then you come back and let us know where he's going to be. And we will send a bunch of men with you so that you can go and arrest him. And what does Judas do? He does all of that. And then when he goes and gets the soldiers, he says, look, I'm going to give you a sign. Whoever I walk up to and kiss, that's going to be Jesus. Because Jesus was an average-looking person. you got a lineup there of Hebrew men at the time, you couldn't have picked Jesus out of the lineup. He was an average Joe. But Judas had been close enough that he knew, okay, the little subtle differences in the face, okay, I can go to him. And all of that type of certainty. That's what Saul's looking for right here, so as he can be as 100% sure about this as possible. Saul wants as clear a map drawn up for him as he can, because he's going to be following this thing. Every detail, every little crook in the road, every fork in the road, there's that huge boulder right there. He wants that drawn on the map. You've got three trees sitting over here. He wants all three of them trees drawn. You count the number of leaves on there, put it on there. He will take that. Give me everything you got. Great. This was Saul's mistake, though. He wanted to gather as much intelligence on David as possible. And he did so by trading away the element of surprise. Okay? Now, we all know that God was going to protect David. David was his man for the throne. Saul's sitting here, and remember, we all have our freedom of choice, our own free will. Saul's getting everything specifically done. If he had just went ahead and said, all right, you guys got me a pretty good area, let's go marching now. Let's take off right now. Might would have caught David before he did here in the text. Might could have caught him with his pants down and captured him. And then God would have had to work the miracle for David to escape. Before Peter ended up having and woke up out of that sleep there in the book of Acts. It could have been David doing the same thing. Everybody's praying for David to be released. And David ends up getting released the same way. We will never know. Because Saul dilly-dallied. When the moment came for him to strike, the iron's hot, we're ready to go, Saul says, and not just yet. And what did it do? It allowed David more time to flee. Because these guys, they had to go all the way from where they were here, all the way up to Gibeah, talk to this king, come all the way back here, try to relocate him. Now they've relocated, now they've got to turn around, they got to go back to Saul. Okay, this is where he's at. All that back and forth there, they may have at best been catching the tail end of David's group before they completely marched out. So hey, we come back. Well, they were right here. Well, now we got to go looking for them even more because you just drug the king out there who should have gone in the first place. But the kings of Israel did seem to have that problem, didn't they? They would be someplace instead of in the battle where they were supposed to be. Of course, that's a David and Bathsheba reference there. So let's see. They could have completely caught David off guard, but instead he delayed. There is a time to be cautious and a time to strike. And David found out about the Ziphites' intentions, and he went ahead and moved on. All the tribes, you'll note here that the verse 23, says that I will search him out throughout all the thousands of Judah. All the tribes were generally broken into groups by their thousands. There's a reference to this over there in Micah 5:2. Of course, that's one of the famous references to the Nativity. I'll get it out in a moment. Bethlehem of Judah and all that, though thou be little among the thousands. And that's simply because of how things were broke down back in Exodus chapter 18, where Moses' father-in-law suggested to him, you need to set up some judges, you know, some's over 10, some's over 50, some's over 100, and some there'll be over 1,000, and the matter that can't be settled by the 10, they'll bring it to the 50. The 50 can't settle, they bring it to the 100. So on and so forth till it finally gets up to you. Well, that the groups of thousands is what's being talked about here and how they are divided up for judgment purposes. Verse 24. And they arose and went to Ziph before Saul. But David and his men were in the wilderness of Maon in the plain on the south of Jeshimon. So having made the arrangements with the king, the men went on ahead to make the final preparations for his arrival and David's capture. David was always ready to relocate his camp, though. His intelligence network had learned of the betrayal
And so by the time those men returned to pinpoint David's location for Saul, David had already been moved out. They did remain in the tribe of Judah, but not where they were expected to be. He moved from the hill country to the desert, slightly to the south. Sometimes a small move on our part can make a big difference in the long run. Now this plain is a tract of desert that runs along the Jordan Valley from the Dead Sea to the Lake Gennesareth. Let's see what we got for time-wise. All right, let's try to get verse 25 in as well. And Saul also and his men went to seek him. And they told David, wherefore he came down into a rock and abode in the wilderness of Maon. And when Saul heard that, he pursued after David in the wilderness of Maon. So Saul felt he had enough credible intelligence to launch another search for David. Such a large group of people on the move is very hard to keep a secret, as we said earlier. So the people from Ziph spotted their movement, saw the overall destination of David's people, and that was to the wilderness of Maon, which is about 3 miles south of Ziph. So it's not like he really got out of Dodge. He just moved a little further away. And sometimes that's enough right there. Just for us to move a little bit. We don't need a huge course correction. But we just need a little bit of a change. And it'll put us right back in line where we need to be. Now, David certainly didn't know about what was going to take place there at En-Gedi. He was just looking for, okay, I can move over to here. And who knows what the next step will be. But God was lining him up so that he was going to have that eventual place to sit down at and give him a nice little jolt, nice little kick in the rear for his own ineptitude here at this point, because he really should have just kept on going to get away from Saul. And occasionally, we do need those swift kicks in our backside to get us going where God wants us to be going. He's off here in that right direction, but you need to take the next step. Need to keep going. And especially when you get in here about this area where they're at and how difficult the terrain would be, he might would have been able to just go ahead and jump his people on over there and just completely disappear off the map as far as Saul was concerned. But he stopped short. And that's another thing that we need to watch for ourselves too, is that we don't keep stopping short of where God wants us to go. Because everything else is still moving. Time is still marching on. People are still having their lives. Work still goes on and all this other stuff here. And if we just stop when we're not supposed to stop, next thing you know, everything's done past us by and we got more ground that we got to get caught up on that we already had, but now we've got to get it back again. I think we're going to go ahead and break it right there since it's just about 6:30. And we'll finish up this chapter next week. So do we have any questions, comments, or concerns? All right. Well, that being the case.